Hey, everybody, it's Claude from the Bill Bennett Show, and we all know what a roller coaster the stock market can be. And I get on that ride every morning, although I probably shouldn't. I'm always checking to see how my portfolio was doing, different stocks to invest in, and it is a roller coaster. But did you know that silver can help offset these dips and bumps? That's right, silver. So historically, during a market roller coaster, silver has always been a steady friend. Not only is it a tangible asset, but right now the silver to gold ratio is at a record high. And silver isn't just a safe haven, it's in demand across multiple industries, electronics, solar panels, medical devices, and more. The consistent demand supports the value of silver even when the markets are all over the place. The opportunity to add silver to your collection won't get much better than this. If you want to learn more, go see our friends at CSN Mint, your go-to for certified U.S. Mint collectible coins and precious metals for over 20 years. I have these coins in my possession, in the house, and I'm telling you, it adds yet another layer of security to your financial portfolio in these turbulent times. When you're ready to make that smart move, go to csnmint.com/build and use promo code BILL at checkout to get free silver American Eagle over $30 in value with your purchase of $75 or more. That's csnmint.com/build and use the promo code BILL at checkout. Again, csnmint.com/build. You got to use the promo code BILL.
Well, welcome back to the Bill Bennett Show. Thoughtful conversation about the news of the day. When we address the existential threats to America, we got a real direct existential threat we're talking about today. Today, we'll catch up with Gordon Chang, conservative columnist, blogger, television pundit, author, lawyer, expert on China, the author of the book, The Coming Collapse of China, and Nuclear Showdown, North Korea Takes on the World. If you have questions for us or comments, or for Gordon, send them to what? Where do they send them, Claude? Where do they send them?
BillBennettShow@gmail.com. We'll make sure we get them to Gordon like we do all of our guests.
BillBennettShow@gmail.com. I'll take this opportunity to say I hope everyone has a very happy Easter. Holiest day of the year for the church, right?
Absolutely. And you know what I've been doing this Holy Week, Bill?
What have you been doing?
I've started watching The Chosen.
Mm-hmm.
And the first two nights that I've watched season one, I've been up till almost 2 o'clock in the morning because I can't hit the stop button. I've got to keep watching every episode.
He's really good, isn't he?
It's unbelievably done. I love the fact that it's done from the perspective of the disciples. I've read some blogs and stuff, and some people have an issue with some of the things not necessarily being written in the Bible. But if you did that, it would be a 20-minute show. And so I'm good with the creative liberty they took, because our life from time to time reflects creative liberty, right? And I'm okay with it. And I am infatuated with Peter. I loved being introduced to Thomas, Mary Magdalene. And then, you know, I love the way that they portray Jesus, a regular guy, fun loving, knows what he's here to do. And every time I watch one episode, I can't stop at one. I've got to watch at least three.
Yeah. You know, I grew up in Catholic Church and thousands of pictures and portrayals of Jesus. And always struck me that he was kind of soft, effeminate, you know, just not a regular guy, you know.
Right.
And then he comes to, you know, agonistic Jesus on the cross and all. That portrayal is just even in the Passion, you know, Mel Gibson's movie, yeah. But this Jesus is so relatable. That's all I can touch. He's in touch with the disciples. He doesn't hedge on doctrine, but he's got a sense of humor and flexibility. He makes jokes, tries to put people at ease. Of course, you know, he does a miracle or two now and then.
He cares for the kids. He cares for kids.
Yeah. Now, who's Peter? Is he called Peter?
No, Simon essentially is.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. Simon. Uh-huh.
And then Simon becomes Peter, right?
Correct. Absolutely.
And Simon is married, and his wife's a little upset with him, right?
Well, yeah, he's making bad decisions. And which, by the way, again, none of that stuff with him is in the Bible, but it plays to the character of the brash guy who always says the first thing on his mind, who seems to be fine taking chances, which is in the Bible, stepping out the boat when he sees Jesus. If that's you, Lord, call me to come and I'll come. And he steps out and walks on water. It fits his character. And they played into that and they established it. And, I just think it's amazing. I think it's amazing.
People could do worse this Easter holiday than watch The Chosen. I think some of it is just wonderful.
Oh, 100%. Absolutely. Wonderful.
Now, you know, I come from a pretty strict religious Catholic background, Catholic schools. My wife is a Southern Methodist. She converted to Catholicism. We traded. We traded Lane Bennett in for you out, I guess. I don't know if it was a good trade, both clubs. But anyway, we both watch, but very different backgrounds, culturally, obviously, and in terms of doctrine. And we're both just mystified and just think it's terrific. He is just terrific. Is this Jonathan Loomy?
Rumi, Rumi, yeah.
Rumi, yeah, Rumi, yeah.
If I could interrupt 1 second, just before you move off the point as far as the Mrs. Bennett and you with the different, backgrounds, but isn't that even when we read in the Bible what Jesus did, tearing down some of those religious walls, focusing on the relationship with God and his, like, isn't that what, that's what he did. Yeah. And so it's interesting that this movie or this series, this television series, kind of does the same thing. Puts things in perspective that, denominations choose what you will, I guess. But if you're focused on the main thing, then the main thing's the main thing.
Yeah. I noticed he's on some of these, Hallow, is it the Hallow channel?
Hallow, yeah.
He's on there praying with Mark Wahlberg. And that's a pretty interesting setup. Great Hollywood actor Wahlberg, who started Boogie Nights, I guess, remember? and then he and Jonathan Rumi are praying. He says, I'm here with Jesus. And Rumi says, no, you're here with me. Yeah. Anyway, I find fascinating the portrayal of Matthew, right? A tax collector.
Correct. Yes.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Very nervous kind of, guy looking at his shoes and kind of afraid to express himself and, knows he's hated because he's a tax collector.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus just plucks him out.
Yeah.
Him
out. My wife even pointed out the fact, Sierra says, I wonder if there's some sort of play on being somewhat on the autism spectrum here with him, which, again, takes some liberty. But, I'm okay with that. But definitely, like he said, understands he's hated among his people, but also not necessarily respected among the Romans, because, why would they? Very interesting depiction of him, I thought.
Yeah, fascinating. The big biblical things are in there. Nicodemus, the woman at the well,
mm-hmm.
Mary Magdalene, Mary Magdalene, Jesus' mother. It's just so good. Well, anyway, we've got to get to Gordon Chang here soon. But so I got to tell you, on the more depressing side of things, and let's just finish with Easter. It's the holiest day of the year. He is risen. He is risen. Amazing. Great miracle. Move that tomb away and out he comes. Comes up to heaven. Resurrection, ascension. Church is born shortly thereafter. So on the other side, you turn on the news 2 days ago, it's bridge collapse. Now, it's in our neighborhood, your neighborhood, my neighborhood, it's right.
Hey, I've taken that bridge several times, and several times after midnight.
Yeah, me too. And a couple of people, I guess, in cars went in the drink, huh?
That's what it looks like. It seems like they were
able to stop.
8 individuals who were doing construction on the bridge, and then the boat did call for Mayday, and the police who were working that night were able to stop other cars from coming on the bridge before that section of it collapsed. But a horrible story, horrible situation.
But did a car or two go in? I think so.
So, I think there were close to 5 or 6 cars that went in, but it appears as though those were the vehicles of the construction workers
who
were
inside
working. Yeah.
You're listening to The Bill Bennett Show. Bill Bennett
Show. Okay, it's time to jump in with Gordon Chang. Gordon, welcome back to the show.
Hey, guys.
What happened with Mike Gallagher?
You know, I do not know. Okay. I find that really, really strange, especially because he resigned after the time that they could hold a special election in a Republican district. I don't know him. I've never spoken to him. So to me, this is a mystery. Washington is sometimes murky, and this one is especially murky.
But he was chairman of a subcommittee focusing on China, and best I could determine, he was doing pretty good work.
He was doing great work. So, for instance, the TikTok bill that the House overwhelmingly passed started from his committee on the Chinese Communist Party. And they've held some really good hearings and the rest of it. But I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, I don't know either. I'm very disappointed. I know him well. He was in between my two sons at Princeton, and my older son knew him there, and my younger son knew him. But knew him better because they both were in the Marine Corps together. And Gallagher, Captain Gallagher, and Joe Bennett, Captain Bennett. Joe is not multilingual like Gallagher is, like five languages, I think. And my son Joe said he's just one of these genius, super genius guys who speaks five languages, Farsi, all that stuff, and mathematics and everything. And there he goes. He just goes and kind of leaves the Republican Party in a terrible position.
Yeah.
I'm going to pick up the phone and ask him what happened, but I just, it was so disappointing. Anyway, a lot of people shared my enthusiasm. Does that committee dissolve or?
I don't think the committee dissolves, but the question is, will the Congress continue the committee later on? I don't think that decision has been made yet.
You mean under Speaker Hakeem Jeffries? Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Gordon, as we are speaking here, on Wednesday, a lot of American business people are in China visiting Xi. What's this all about?
Yeah, great question. Today, Xi Jinping actually met with CEOs in the Great Hall of the People. And this is sort of reminiscent of his speech that he gave on November 15th, just after Xi Jinping met Joe Biden. And that time, Xi gave a generality-laden speech, which convinced nobody in the room. There were like 400 CEOs there. Today, he did the same thing. Generalities, obviously not leveling with the executives. He's probably also going to fail to convince them. I actually think what's going on is not that Xi Jinping is going to change his policies in response to pressures from the CEOs. I think that the Chinese regime wanted a spectacle of foreigners going to Beijing and paying homage to the Chinese leader. This is sort of an echo of foreigners going to the Grand Celestial Court in imperial times and bowing to the emperor.
Yeah.
So this is probably just made for television stuff. And Xi Jinping really has no intention of listening to the concerns of the CEOs.
And were their concerns, as best you could tell, legitimate and sensible?
Yes, because Xi Jinping has been responsible for a campaign assaulting foreign companies. Okay. This has been going on for a very long time, but it especially became clear a year ago this month when China raided the offices of Minsk Group, which is a U.S. due diligence firm. That office was in Beijing. They imprisoned, I think, all of the employees. And then China then raided Bain & Company in Shanghai the following month and then went after some other U.S. companies. This was sort of the event that caught people's attention because people knew for quite some time that China was actually working very hard to undermine the foreign business community. But people were not willing to say very much about it until the raid on Mintz. And right now, the business community is decoupling from China. They won't say it, but that's what they're doing. When they're putting new investments into Asia, those new investments are rarely going into China. And that's because people are very, very concerned, not only about the U.S.-China relations, but more important about what Xi Jinping is doing to foreign companies, trying to kick them out and severely cripple them.
I want to get clear on this because I heard somebody, a Wall Street Journal person, somebody saying, you know, he wanted to bring them in because part of him believes that, you know, he needs the innovative practices of the West, capitalism and free markets and so on. But this conflicts with his desire to keep his thumb on the economy. But as you keep your thumb on the economy in an authoritarian or totalitarian regime, you know, the economy fails, as it seems to be failing now.
Is failing now. It is. It's not growing at the 5.2% pace that Beijing reported for last year. If it grew last year, and we don't know that, Bill, but if it grew, it grew no more than the 1.5% that the Rhodium Group estimated. And in any event, even if it were growing at 5.2%, it's not growing fast enough to pay back the debt that China has accumulated, especially since the 2008 great financial crisis. China, to sort of put it in simplistic terms, but basically China's having its 2008 downturn now. It's got to pay back debt. It can't do it. And Xi Jinping is a Maoist. And although he doesn't have the power to push China back to full Maoism, he has been implementing Mao-like solutions, and therefore he has been moving China in the wrong directions. And while all of this has been going on for the last half decade, he has been isolating China from the world in general, not just the economy, not just the financial system. He has been cutting links between his regime, his country, and the outside. And this has happened periodically in Chinese history. This goes back thousands of years. And we know from every time this has happened, Bill, that it's been a catastrophe for China. So we can see that this is on the same path. You know, these foreign business executives, they should know better what's going on. It's hideous that they're there, but fortunately, they are not putting more money into China. They are there just so that China won't retaliate against them.
I guess my question then is, and this is what I want to lead into, what does that mean if the Chinese economy is turning down? This is the recession of 2008? Would it be right to call it that?
Yes, I think so.
Okay. What does that mean for Chinese ambitions overseas? First of all, economic ambitions. Still all over the place, digging minerals in Africa and elsewhere and expanding in that way? Is that still going on?
That's still going on. They're still exploiting Africa and Latin America. But their Belt and Road Initiative is running out of money. And we can see this from any number of different countries. And it's also extremely unpopular inside China with the Chinese people, because they make the simple argument, we need this or we need that. And why are you spending the money in Kenya? And it's an argument that has sort of prevailed in Beijing, because we know over the last couple of years that the emphasis on Belt and Road in official pronouncements and what leaders say, it's just sort of not there. If you go back to 2013, when the Belt and the Road initiatives were first announced, everything was Belt and Road. For the last 3 or 4 years, they'll talk about it, but not to the same extent as they did before. Problem is, China's just running out of money. It's imperial overstretch, as Paul Kennedy of Yale talked about. And so China right now is in trouble. And really what it means that Xi Jinping must be seeing a closing window of opportunity to achieve what he considers to be historic goals, because he's running out of the means to accomplish what he wants. And so I think that he believes that if he doesn't do this soon, he may not be able to do it at all.
Do what?
Basically impose China's will on the rest of the world. Xi Jinping, if we step back, has been throughout this century using language of the imperial era, where Chinese emperors believed that they not only had the mandate of heaven to rule what they called Tianxia, or all under heaven, but that heaven actually compelled them to do so. So this is not just China wanting to be dominant or to be a hegemon. This is China absolutely ruling the world. And it got even worse, because in 2017, Xi Jinping's officials started to talk about the moon and Mars as sovereign Chinese territory. That's right, part of the People's Republic of China. So he is the most ambitious aggressor in history. Now, if everybody in the world believes that China's going to take over, then Xi Jinping feels he's on a glide path to global rule. But unfortunately for him, his method of getting what he wants is often just intimidation. And you can't intimidate other countries if the others around the world feel that your society is failing. And so Xi Jinping, I believe, is going to, if he's going to move, he's going to move fast. You know, it could, what we're seeing, for instance, you know, of course, they're pressuring Taiwan, but they're also engaging in very dangerous conduct in the South China Sea at Second Thomas Shoal of the Philippines, Scarborough Shoal of the Philippines, and Whitsun Reef of the Philippines. So this is where the next conflict can start.
I know those areas. My son was there. My Marine son was there in the Philippines. Part of the move west, or move east, sorry, that was going on during Trump. Does the effect of this economic turndown recession affect his ability, not his interest or wish, but his ability to achieve world, what do I want to say, domination? You had a distinction in something you read, wrote. He said he wants to rule the world, not conquer the world, or something like that, right? He doesn't want to conquer it. He wants to just rule it. Or I can't remember what the two verbs were, but it wasn't like he wants to squash everybody. He just wants to be in charge. Am I getting this right?
Well, his language is the language of Chinese emperors who believe that they should rule the world. In other words, there's no other sovereign state than China. And we can go through some of the things that his subordinates have said. But his foreign minister in 2017 sort of encapsulated this when he said that, when he wrote that Xi Jinping's thought on diplomacy, and in Communist Party lingo, a thought is an important body of ideological work. Wang Yi, the foreign minister, wrote that Xi Jinping's thought on diplomacy, quote, has made innovations on and transcended the traditional Western theories of international relations of the past 300 years. You take 2017, you subtract 300 years, you almost get to the Peace of Westphalia of 1648, which established the current system of sovereign states. So when Wang Yi writes that Xi Jinping wants to transcend that system, he's saying that there should be no sovereign states, or at least no more of them than China. And in Xi Jinping's other pronouncements, we see and hear these Tianxia themes. So it's clear that they believe that they should rule the world and that the United States, for instance, is really nothing more than a colony. And this is a very dangerous mentality. Now, we Americans may think that's ludicrous. And yes, it is ludicrous. But the point is, this is what's driving Xi Jinping. And we cannot afford to ignore him. We ignored Osama bin Laden. We even ignored him after the guy killed six Americans in 1993 by bombing the North Tower of the World Trade Center. But we did not ignore him after one day where Osama killed 2,977 Americans.
Yeah. I guess I'm pushing it from the other side. Maybe it's a distinction without a real difference. But this isn't necessarily to annihilate or vanquish everyone else. It's simply to be in charge, to rule. Is that fair?
Well, I'd like to think that that's what he wants to do, just to dominate. But I don't think so. And to put this in even starker terms, in China's tightly controlled public square, the topic of the extermination of the American people is a permitted discussion.
Okay.
And this goes back to a secret speech given by China's then defense minister in the first half decade of this century, General Chu Haotan, where he talks specifically about killing every American. Mm-hmm. Now, people dispute that this speech actually was delivered, but it is consistent with other things that we have heard and consistent with Chinese doctrine. So we have to assume that their goal is not just colonizing us. Their goal is to kill us. That's really stark. But as I said, we cannot ignore what these guys are saying about us, because even though this is crazy talk, this is what's driving this dangerous regime.
Okay, so does the economic circumstance make invasion, nuclear war, attack, aggressive aggression more likely or less likely?
Could be either. In a rational state, it would make it less likely, just like in the Soviet Union. We were very fortunate in the Soviet Union. Unfortunately, Xi Jinping, like the month after he was named General Secretary of the Communist Party in 2012, that's China's ruler, Xi Jinping gave a speech about Gorbachev and criticizing him severely for losing the faith. And one of the phrases that came out of that speech was that Gorbachev was not a quote-unquote real man. Xi Jinping believes he's a real man, and that leads one to at least be concerned that his response to failure would not be submission, as in the case of Gorbachev, and recognition of reality, but would be to lash out, because Xi Jinping has an incentive to do that. Just to sort of put this from his context, invading Taiwan, invading Japan, Philippines would seem like a low probability of success. But Xi Jinping might decide to do it anyway. And I just bear with me for a few seconds, because I want to sort of scope out what we think is happening inside China. We know that Xi Jinping, when he became General Secretary of the Communist Party in 2012, he inherited a consensual political system where no Chinese leader got too much credit or too much blame, because every decision was shared across the various factions at the top of the Communist Party. But Xi Jinping, by grabbing power from everybody else, ended up with full accountability, or near full accountability, which means he's got nobody else to blame. And to make things worse, Xi Jinping inherited a political system where no person who lost a political struggle ever lost too much. But Xi Jinping raised the cost of losing political struggles by jailing his opponents and stripping them of their assets and humiliating them. So Xi Jinping's in a position where China's failing. Everybody knows it inside China. Everybody knows who's responsible for this. And so Xi Jinping probably believes he's got a pretty low threshold of risk, because even if by invading Taiwan, he has only a 10% chance of success, that looks pretty good to him, because he may believe he's only got a 1% chance of survival. So
I have two questions. I just want to interrupt. Two questions about what you've said in the last couple of minutes. We're very lucky with Russia. What do you mean?
Well, we're lucky with Russia that when it failed, very few people died. And that was in part because Gorbachev recognized reality and he decided not to lash out. I mean, he could have lashed out against somebody to distract the Russian people or the Soviet people.
Okay. All right. It was good for the Russian people, not necessarily for us. Okay.
Well, it was good for us because we didn't have war.
Yeah.
I mean, the regime imploded.
Right. He was worried about Star Wars. Did you know that?
Oh, he was definitely worried about Star Wars.
Well, I was talking to Ken Adelman about it, reading his book, Reagan at Reykjavik, and he says that, Gorbachev said, he wouldn't come to the table unless Reagan got rid of Star Wars. In the meeting later that evening, Reagan said, guys, fill me in on where we are on Star Wars. He was aware of it, but was not aware that what a threat it was in the mind of Gorbachev. Amazing. Very interesting. Anyway, I don't want to be distracted. I want to stay in China. You also said everyone in China knows who's responsible for the problem. Do they know it's him? Is he? Xi Jinping?
Yes, because it's his policies that have guided or ruled the country for a half decade.
Okay.
So there's very few people that are, to blame. It's Xi Jinping.
Okay. Let's now make this discussion particular. Well, let's go to Taiwan. How far away is Taiwan from mainland China?
Well, the island of Kinmen, where there's been recent Chinese activity, is about 3 to 4 nautical miles from the coast of China. The main island of Taiwan is 110 miles or so. But there are outlying islands which are within visual distance of the Chinese cities.
Hopping. In other words, they could hop. Chinese could hop from island to island.
They could certainly do that. And there are a few islands in the middle of the Taiwan Strait that are part of Taiwan.
But let me start with the larger question. Does the economic turndown and mess, same question I had earlier, make it more or less likely that he'll invade Taiwan or attack Taiwan?
I believe it makes it more likely that he'll attack something. Not necessarily Taiwan.
No.
And the reason is that the people in Taiwan consider themselves to be Taiwanese. We see this from self-identification surveys. But the people in China through decades of indoctrination, believe that the people in Taiwan are Chinese. And the Chinese right. people believe, and you will hear this from person on the street, and you'll also hear it from officials, that the Chinese do not kill the Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
And so a war on Taiwan would not be particularly popular at this particular moment or for a long time.
Would it be affordable given the economic circumstances?
Yeah, China could afford it.
Does the economic turndown affect their ability to wage a war or an invasion?
Not in the short term.
Okay.
In the short term, the Chinese military is still getting a larger and larger proportion of the resources of the Chinese central government.
And the short term is how long?
I'd say it's about 3 or 4 years.
Okay. All right. So that's a lot of time. So you asking you whether it's more likely or less likely, you think it's more likely, but you don't think it's Taiwan because Chinese don't want to kill Chinese. Where would it be then? What would be the target?
Well, we have seen over the last 6 months, but, you know, going last Saturday, for instance, some very belligerent Chinese activities at Second Thomas Shoal, which is part of the Philippines, pretty close to the main Philippine islands, very far mm-hmm. from China. But China has been ramping up pressure on them. So much so that on the 5th of this month, the State Department, for like the 5th or 6th time, issued a written warning to China that the United States was prepared to use force against Chinese forces in order to discharge our obligations to the Philippines pursuant to the Mutual Defense Treaty between the U.S. and Manila. And Biden, President Biden himself, on October 22nd, on the steps of the White House, when the Australian Prime Minister Albanese was there, actually issued an oral warning to China of the same substance. But the Chinese keep on ignoring these warnings, which means deterrence has broken down. But, you know, it doesn't have to be that Xi Jinping wakes up one morning and saying, I'm invading Taiwan today, I'm invading the Philippines or Japan. It could very well be these very dangerous intercepts in the global commons of our ships and planes, and one of them goes wrong. So there's any number of different ways that a war can start. And this war, when it starts, is unlikely to stay conventional.
Do you think we'll have war?
Yes.
You do?
Let me put it this way. We are seeing the same patterns that existed in the late 1930s in Europe or around the world. In the late 1930s, there were separate wars, and those wars merged into what we now call World War II. Right now, there's a war in Ukraine. There are insurgencies in Northern Africa that look like wars that are fueled by China and Russia. And of course, there's the war in the Middle East, which has spread from Gaza to the Red Sea to Lebanon. And the question that Americans have to ask is, there is a momentum to war. The issue is, we will be in a war unless something changes. And the issue is, what is going to change? Right now, I don't see anything changing because the policies of the Biden administration, which are supposed to manage these conflicts, have made the situation over time worse.
Yeah.
And if Biden remains president, I'm sure that this war that we see are going to spread. China and Russia are directly or indirectly fighting in all of those locations I mentioned, which means there's no such thing as a regional war anymore because every conflict now has global implications.
So that warning that Biden issued on the steps in October is maybe about the best thing he's done or said on this.
Yes, but the Chinese ignored him.
Yeah, okay.
Which is, you know, I give him credit for issuing the warning, but the problem is that the Chinese have just completely ignored that. They've ignored the State Department's warnings, and that indicates deterrence has failed.
But that was don't touch the Philippines, is that right?
Yes,
that
the warning was this way, that the United States is prepared to use force against China to discharge our obligations pursuant to Article 4 of the U.S.-Philippine Mutual Defense Treaty.
Okay. We have a pretty substantial military presence in the Philippines as well.
Sort of. To the credit of President Ferdinand Marcos Jr., the U.S. and China are fast putting together sort of like a network of logistical bases so that the United States could rush to the aid of the Philippines. But this is recent development. You know, Biden deserves credit for this. The point is, though, it's too late.
Did you say
it could very well be too late?
Did you say the U.S. and China?
Sorry, U.S. and Philippines.
Right, okay.
Putting together the infrastructure in the Philippines.
So you think it'll happen? You think it'll happen in the next 3 or 4 years?
It's more probable than not. The only factor that could change things would be the election of a person named Donald John Trump.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that that's enough to stop this, but I'm saying that if he doesn't get elected, we probably are going to be involved in a war with China.
And it'll be go from conventional to nuclear.
Fast, yes.
Fast, wow.
I mean, I could be wrong on the fast part, but I believe it will go nuke for a number of reasons.
Who wins that war?
We do.
We do.
At but great cost.
Great cost. Suffer a lot, right?
Not only suffering, but losing Americans in unimaginable numbers.
Yeah, that's what I mean, yeah. Wow. Okay. Claude, I should have let you in. You have something burning you want to ask, please?
One thing that came to mind is how when you look at what's happening across the globe, even like right now, present day, where there is, you know, Israel, Hamas, you've got Russia, Ukraine. There's so many different things, you know, all the... I don't know if I want to say passive aggressive, but like this proxy thing with Iran, where would you, Gordon, put China on the list of threats, even though it may not be in the forefront of the American media and the American mind right now?
China, in my mind, is the threat. Now, China is not fighting directly in any of these places, but Russia could not maintain the war effort against Ukraine. And Iran could not be maintaining its terrorist proxies who are fighting Israel were it not for Chinese support. So, for instance, just take one of these. And by the way, China and Russia are fueling the insurgencies in North Africa. And so they're making things a lot worse there as well. Just to give you an example, on the October 7th war, China is supporting this in number of ways. So, for instance, last year, China's purchases of Iranian crude oil were about 60% above that in 2017. 2017 is relevant because that was the last year before the Trump administration reimposed sanctions on the purchase of Iranian oil. So Iran got a lot of money for this, but it's more than that. China's weapons have found their ways in large quantities in the hands of Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Houthi militia. Chinese diplomats provide cover to the Iran's effort against Israel, and China's propaganda efforts are certainly on Iran's side. So, for instance, if we take our favorite Chinese social media platform, TikTok, more than 96% of the videos about Hamas are in favor of Hamas's attack on Israel. That's because of the curation algorithm of TikTok that Beijing manipulates to disseminate its propaganda. So
amazing.
Yeah.
We haven't talked about the war at home. We had another half hour, we would, but guys coming in, Chinese coming in at the border and purchases of farmland and intellectual influences, universities, and man, just, you know, a lot of grappling hooks, right?
Yes, especially these migrants. If you go back a couple of years, the Chinese migrants who were coming into the United States across the southern border were basically family groups, people, desperate Chinese who were leaving a failing society. These days, somewhere between 80-85% of the Chinese who are coming across are single males of military age, traveling without family members, some of them pretending not to speak English. U.S. Border Patrol knows that some of them have links to the Chinese military. We are seeing some very disturbing behavior of Chinese migrants. So, for instance, on the Defiant America website in late January, we saw these videos of Chinese migrants who had been in the U.S. less than 3 weeks, who had come into our country with no money, no identification, were taking target practice with pistols and a sniper rifle. And this has been going on in other locations as well. So that is crazy dangerous. And one other thing, Bill, it's not just our southern border. It's our northern border as well, because about 3 weeks ago, 2.5 weeks ago, Chinese migrants were trying to sneak into Maine. Border Patrol caught them. What was really ominous was that there were Chinese nationals on our side of the border who were there, obviously by prearrangement, hoping to get these guys into our country undetected. If you're a desperate Chinese and you're coming to the U.S., you want to be caught by Border Patrol because you want the debit card of New York City. If you're coming here and you're trying to avoid detection, that means you're coming here for no good, whether it's joining a Chinese triad or whether you are planning to kill Americans. It's just very dangerous.
Well, goodness gracious.
One more from me. When it comes, one thing we hadn't talked about today, you mentioned it briefly, but I think it's worth mentioning, is this Chinese investment we've been seeing in the last few years in Africa. Could, any updates on that and this Chinese interest in investment in Africa and what that in a large scale or a large picture may mean? What's the play there?
Well, China is continuing to invest in Africa. And remember, Mao, the founder of the People's Republic, Mao looked to Africa to be support his ambitions to lead what is now called the Global South. China's problem right now is that it's running out of money. So some of these Belt and Road projects, which were just totally uneconomic to start out with, you know, are running out of cash. We're starting to see this in Kenya. But China's still continuing to mine important minerals there, buying farmland, trying to still dominate Africa. What's different now is that a lot of people on the continent don't want the Chinese there because the Chinese have come in and have just been just completely exploited the local communities and have been, you know, as bad as the Belgians, the French, you know, everybody else in the 19th century, which is even worse than what the Europeans did. So people are in Africa are starting to say, this ain't right. This is not good for us. But China still has the upper hand because it's corrupted elites across the continent. And as I mentioned, above the Sahara Desert and in the Sahel, just immediately south of the Sahara Desert, you have very dangerous Chinese activities, along with their friends, the Russians, to destabilize these governments, fueling coups, insurgencies. And it is, we're not effectively countering what the Chinese and Russians are doing. So North Africa is a real mess at this moment.
Gordon, it's been years now, but we rely on you and thank you so much for your work.
Well, thank you so much, Bill and Claude. I really appreciate this opportunity. Sure. Thank you.
Well, that does it for today's show. To catch up on previous episodes of the show, go to thebillbennettshow.com. You can follow me on X, formerly Twitter, William J. Bennett, and you can like me on Facebook. Just search Bill Bennett. Feel free to email the show. I'd love to hear from you. It's billbennettpodcast@gmail.com. Please share the podcast with your family and friends. We'll catch up next week.